Burma, at present, is a very weak area. And yet, the Burmese stand internationally on their own feet. They do not want to go back to the British Commonwealth. They do not want to get into too close contact with India, don't care for Indian intervention. They certainly don't want the Chinese to come in. And while they want economic help, I believe the Burma government has just asked for a $50 million loan from the United States. They'd like a little economic help without so much political advice, if you please. In Thailand, the situation is somewhat different. The Thai people would tell a foreign visitor like myself that they have had great success and learned great things in the past from a philosophy which might be described as lean with the wind. If the wind blows too hard, lean with it a little bit, and then when it stops blowing, come back. Now, the Thai have been very skillful in organizing counter breezes. They have skillfully played the British against the French and maintained their independence for a very long time. But in the present scene, they look at themselves after having passed through a decade which has been terribly hard for the whole of Asia. They've gone through the Japanese period. They've come out of it. Their bridges are not destroyed. Their roads are not disorganized. Their economy is not as badly off as those of some of the neighbors. They're not now having riots and guerrilla warfare as are some of their neighbors. They rather are inclined to think that the lean with the wind philosophy is not too bad a philosophy. The Prime Minister of Thailand, Field Marshal Phibun Songkhram, has taken a somewhat different view. He is the strong man of the country. He stands and has so far averted or defeated all attempts at coup d'etat. He has decided now that if there is pressure from the North, pressure from Communist China, his time has come to ally himself with all of his important neighbors, meaning the Western countries, with Britain, with France, and with the United States. To do this, his government recognized Bao Dai in Vietnam, although no other government in Asia had thought or has yet thought that Bao Dai in Vietnam sufficiently represents his people so that the other Asian countries should recognize him, as have done Britain and America, as well as France. In Thailand, therefore, the present situation is that the government is supporting an American, French, and British policy in the area with the expectation that American, British, and French forces will support the Thai government. Let me continue this report by making a reference to Malaya. Sometime last fall, Malcolm MacDonald, the chief British diplomatic officer in Southeast Asia, expressed great confidence publicly that the situation in Malaya was fine, improving daily, that Bao Dai was a very successful ruler in Indochina, and that really Southeast Asia wasn't so troubled as some people had thought. I talked to Malcolm MacDonald a few weeks ago, and he himself felt that he had been over-optimistic. The speed with which the communist regime took over China had instilled new vigor into the overseas Chinese community through all of the countries of Southeast Asia. I found myself, in talking with Chinese in various places, that they responded affirmatively, for the most part, to communist control in China. Their reasoning was not that they were pro-communist, for the most part. These are rich Chinese who live in Southeast Asia. They're people who handle trade and banking and who have made fortunes. Their monies helped to support Chiang Kai-shek through the slim war years when he was getting very few foreign funds from almost anywhere else in the world. Today, they are, many of them, growing more and more in favor of the Chinese communist regime. And the reason is this. They regard themselves as a minority in a foreign land. The Chinese all through Southeast Asia have this attitude. What they want is a strong homeland that can support them, that can take up their case in the event they get into trouble with the local people. And a strong China to them is so useful and so important that they are much better satisfied with a strong communist China than with a weak Kuomintang China. Well, in addition to this feeling, there are, of course, many elements that are definitely pro-communist among the very large Chinese communities in this area. The labor unions, for example, are largely Chinese and largely pro-communist. So are many of the others. Malcolm MacDonald said that he was worried to some extent, but he was still trying to persuade the leaders of the Chinese feeling that the West had not yet retreated out of Southeast Asia, that it would serve them well to remember that the world is not entirely the world of communist China, and that if they showed a little fortitude, law and order might be restored in Malaya, and the general condition a year hence might be much better. Malaya, I may say, is going through political troubles and at the same time having a wonderful economic boom. The rubber planters, who have been complaining since the end of the war that they've been in very bad straits, today almost admit openly, as much as businessmen ordinarily would admit openly, that they're making profits. They almost admit openly that they've never had it so good. The devaluation of British currencies and currencies linked to the pound sterling has meant that they get more of their own local Straits dollars for every U.S. dollar paid for rubber. In other words, there's been, in terms of their currency, a price increase for rubber. And then, in addition, the American government proved to be a Santa Claus a few months ago by relaxing its requirement that, as to the percentage of synthetic rubber, which has to be used in American products. Therefore, the market for Malayan rubber is much better, and they're having, as I say, a real boom. Malaya is another country that is internally weak, that needs some time and some strong effort to build itself up. In the islands of Indonesia, just off the continental shelf, the picture is in essence much the same. The islands of Indonesia provide today, however, in addition, an extraordinary lesson for the political scientist, the proof that political power is rather more fundamental in the situation than paper agreements. It was agreed at The Hague last year that a Netherlands-Indonesia union should be formed, with the Netherlands on the one hand and the United States of Indonesia on the other, and that the United States of Indonesia should consist of 16 constituent states. Of these 16, one was the Republic of Indonesia, which had led the resistance against Dutch rule for years. It was a dominant revolutionary force. The other 15 were local states created in one way or another, largely by Dutch influence. When the Dutch responsibility for internal security ended in Indonesia, the other 15 began to crumble. The process, I may say, was vigorously assisted by the revolutionary groups in the Republic of Indonesia. Even while I was there, I found people predicting that this state and that state, within a few days, would vote to join the Republic. And they were doing that very rapidly indeed. Even the parliamentary representatives from the constituent federalist states voted to join the Republic. They saw which way the wind was blowing and decided that they had better move in that direction if they wanted a political future. This process has now gone a long way. There are still some standouts, as you've seen in the newspapers. Three and perhaps four revolts have occurred in the process of absorption, the way in which the Republic of Indonesia is gobbling up the other states. But the process continues and is going on toward its end. Like a boy eating apples, the last apples are a little harder to digest than the first ones. As the Republic goes on to East Indonesia, and some of the more distant states, it's having more difficulty and will continue to have more difficulty, I fear. But that process is going on. There is a problem also for Indonesia of rationalizing the administration. I stopped at a little place called Salatiga in central Java while I was driving along the road to Yogyakarta, not the same road on which two friends were killed some weeks later. I talked in Felatiga with a local administrative official whose job it was to try to integrate two or three different types of administration in that area. The Dutch had had their officials. The Republic had their officials. The army had included some civil responsibility in its organization. And this poor man was trying to get them all together. Well, every official, of course, had members of his family. Everybody was putting pressure on from one direction or another. As far as I could see, with an administrative structure calling for perhaps 100 officers, and with 300 who wanted the jobs, he was facing up to the problem largely by saying, well, we'll have 279 jobs. And I think that for the time being, that was what he was trying to do. The problem facing the government of Indonesia, the leaders of Indonesia, is to establish law and order and a sound administration, try to make the country a place where people can devote themselves to rehabilitation of their economic productivity. Prime Minister Hatta, talking about this problem, said he thought he was making progress. He said he needed foreign help. As a matter of fact, he recognized that the United States has been helping Indonesia. It's granted a $100 million loan from the Export-Import Bank, and the American Embassy in Jakarta, the new name for Batavia, is seeking to work with the government and give it some encouragement. But Prime Minister Hatta, like leaders in other Asian countries, came back to a theme which is old and which is familiar. He said, we don't want to get involved in the Cold War of the West. We've just gotten our independence. Political independence is not enough. It doesn't magically resolve all of our troubles. We have fundamental internal problems which are confronting us from morning till night. It'll take us 5 years at least to get on our feet. We don't want any part of your Cold War. What we would like to have, and he didn't put it in quite this American term, but what he meant and what very clearly was, what we would like to do is to build a fence around us for, say, 5 years so that we can pay attention to our own affairs and not have the neighbors come in troubling us. This fence philosophy is recognizable in the United States as defensive isolationism and is a very strong feature of thinking throughout Southeast Asia. I mention that again because we'll come to it in discussing prospects for this whole region. The Philippines, like Thailand, take a somewhat different point of view. The Philippines, I think, today are somewhat disappointing to a foreign visitor who rather thought that American political and economic tutelage might create a strong state in the Far East. Tyrone Power went out there some weeks ago, as you undoubtedly read, to make a film called American Guerrilla, in which I suspect he is going to portray the role of a hero who sweeps the Japanese from his path over one hill and another valley and from island to island. There was a movie set at some miles from Manila. When it came time to go down to that movie set, he declined to go by road on the ground that the guerrillas who are now active in the Philippines might very well cause damage to his car and his person. Well, perhaps he was wise. There are very few places in Southeast Asia today where it is possible to get into an automobile, drive outside of the major cities, and with a feeling of complete safety and security, pass through the countryside. There are exceptions. I found that Central Java was quiet, although, as we've had evidence since, East Java certainly is not. West Java is not. Thailand is quiet, but not Burma, not the Philippines, at least not the northern islands of the Philippines, and not Indochina. The Philippines, before I leave them, are seeking at this moment to organize governments in Southeast Asia to make some sort of a common program, a Southeast Asian Union, which they say will be cultural, economic, and political, not military, to make a joint stand against communism in the area. They're having their troubles. The other countries are playing coy. Prime Minister Hatta said that Indonesia does not want to participate in any regional bloc. I've believe now it's possible that Indonesia may send an ambassador. In Burma, they said that they weren't interested. Nehru in India said he thought the time was not right, but the Filipinos are going ahead with that just the same. Vietnam, I think, shows the real crisis, the real difficulty confronting American policy in Southeast Asia.